Hello, and welcome to Pod Space Nine, the last stop for trash in the Alpha Quadrant. This is a rewatch podcast for Star Trek Deep Space Nine, featuring two veteran viewers and one newbie. My name is Justin, and I'll be your way team commander. Joining you is my science officer, Anna, with our acting ensign, Jude. Jude, Anna, which alien species in Star Trek would you like to be shotgun wedding to the most?
Ooh, good question.
Or in Star Trek? Which Star Trek species would be the most fun to get shotgun wedding into?
Oh, that's a different question. That's a super different question.
I changed my question because I...
No, it's got to be the Denobulans. It's got to be the Denobulans for all of these, right?
So you could just be part of the harem?
Yes, yes. And have my own harem. And like everything's one big culture of harem. And it is a beautiful thing. And I want more of this species in Star Trek. And it's a tragedy that we don't see them other than an Enterprise.
I don't know who they are, and I refuse to learn more because they're from Enterprise, apparently.
No. Dr. Phlox is like the best part of Enterprise.
Phlox is
a D&D character, and I say that in the like most like affectionate loving and chaotic way. Yeah.
Phlox is like if we came up with a Star Trek series and this was the bad pod idea of what a chief medical officer would be.
No, Phlox is what... No. Okay. Phlox is what would happen if Silver came up with a sci-fi series. How are you going to cure that? Eels.
Yeah, listeners, Silver is a friend of the pod who has never appeared on here because I'm pretty sure if we put Silver in front of a live mic, it would just destroy recording equipment. But their thing is generally just making the worst idea possible in the name of it'd be funny.
That's accurate.
My answer, the most fun species to get shotgunned wedding to, I feel like it would have to be either the Ferengi or the Betazoids. Like,
Betazoids
Lox-Wana,
would be fun.
Lox-Wana, I mean, really sells that they're a... that they're a party. Maybe that's an inaccurate
depiction. Also, their weddings are naked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Nudist weddings.
But also, the Ferengi, I just feel like that would be such fucking madness. I don't think I want to be a part of Ferengi culture. But if we're talking about what would be the most bananas culture to get, like, shotgunned wedding into, that would be a story to tell. I gotta go with Betazoid, though. I think that would be...
That's honestly a good answer. I mean, like,
what about you, Justin? You're like, God damn it! I ask the questions. I don't have to answer them.
Yeah, no, I ask the questions. I don't like. I do.
This is a fun question, though.
Yeah, I think the most fun would be. I mean, I think it would be pretty fun to get like end up like marrying a Klingon.
Yeah, just for the yucks and for like the fish out of water, Klingon's answer.
Let's face it.
You want Grilka to step on you? We all want Grilka to step on me.
Listen, I just want a woman who could murder me, who could snap my neck and feel no remorse, and be like, just, you know, it's, I mean, that or like, I mean, also Klingon dudes. I mean, I will not
There's
say
no,
no
losing there. If that's what you're
I want
for.
A man who can sing poetry to me.
Yes.
If I gotta throw furniture at him, I'm okay with that.
Like I love the vibe of the Klingon restaurateur on the promenade who's like they're singing with Dax with the guy.
Yeah.
Gosh.
There you go.
Yeah, we're doing a double recording tonight. One of the four episodes we were talking about tonight is not a favorite of mine, but we will get to that one in our next week's episode. But tonight we are covering episodes 3 and 4 of The House of Quark and Equilibrium. Jude, you have The House of Quark at my specific request.
I
take it away.
I can't believe you guys gave this one to me.
I had to do it to you.
No, do it to me. It was a gift.
Sometimes we give you the ones that are bad and sometimes we give you the ones that are fantastic.
Boy, howdy. Episode 3 of Season 3, The House of Quark, story by Tom Banco, teleplay by our buddy Ronnie D. Moore, directed by Les Landau. The episode opens with Morn leaving Quarks for once, much to the proprietor's dismay. It's 2100 and no one is drinking except a thoroughly tanked Klingon who is a dozen blood wines deep. Quark blames Sisko for picking a fight with the Dominion, which has scared people away from visiting the station. Quark's lamentations are interrupted by said Klingon wanting more drinks on credit. Quark goes over to turn him away, but ends up groveling like he's on a hot date. Groveling turns into grappling, again like a hot date, but ends up with a knife in the Klingon's chest. Whoops. Later, as Bashir examines the body and Odo paces anxiously, no doubt out of jealousy, Quark is thrilled to finally have something attracting people to the bar. Apparently, without concern for any legal repercussions, in what I'm sure will not be prophetic words, Rom is fearful of what will happen if his family comes looking for revenge when Quark decides to spin it as if he killed the Klingon in a bar fight, and not that it was an accidental death, as it was. When Odo and Bashir finish the examination and come over to ask what happened, Quark plays it to the crowd at the windows, talking himself up dramatically as he retells a highly original version of the events that transpired. Neither Bashir nor Odo look impressed. Afterwards, the bar is hopping, and Odo and Quark spar about Quark's story. The Klingon, as it turns out, besides being a notorious drunk, was also the head of a somewhat powerful family. Rom agrees, and Odo leaves, but Quark refuses to back down. It's about respect now. And if they show up, he'll bribe them. Sure enough, that evening, he's accosted by the Klingon, whose name is Kozak's brother, or so he claims, who stops Quark before he can tell him it was an accident and says that such an implication would dishonor his brother. But if he died in combat, that's another thing. Quark, getting the drift, sticks to his story and promises to tell his customers about the honorable way in which Kozak died. His brother, however, is not the last of Quark's troubles, as his next visitor is Grilka, Kozak's widow. After she draws a knife on him and throws him around a little bit, Quark, afraid and pretty turned on, tells her how it actually happened. She tranks him, which is not how his dates usually end, and when he wakes up, she's taken him to Kronos, where it is revealed that Dagor is not, in fact, Kozak's brother, but an enemy of his house. His goal is to force the house of Kozak into failing so he can take it over. But Grilka has other plans. At knife point, she marries Quark.
This is honestly the point where it becomes my favorite episode in the history of DS9.
We'll get there. It's amazing, though. This is an amazing moment. Yeah. What I love about this is the very next sentence, that she marries him at knife point, comma, and then drags him in front of Gowron himself.
Robert O'Reilly is in the house.
Yes.
I'm so happy.
With the eyes, the Gowron eyes.
Yeah, the Gowron eyes. He's not... Before an incredibly bored-looking Gowron, Gowron looks incredibly bored right up until Quark scurries in like a terrified rodent. Grilka interrupts Dagor as he is attempting to annex her house to announce her marriage to Quark in accordance with all proper rituals. Everyone clearly recognizes that this is fucking ridiculous, but as it fulfills all the forms, it stands, much to Dagor's disgust and Gowron's tired boredom.
Yes, he is like everybody who's been in way too many committee meetings.
Yeah, Gowron is clearly the guy that has ascended to leadership and now has no patience for bullshit.
It's just like, God, they take away my phone, so I can't put Candy Crush under the desk anymore.
Right. Back at the newly minted House of Quark, it becomes clear that Grilka's plan didn't extend much beyond don't get taken over by marrying the dumb Ferengi. But Quark, interestingly, has no intention of rolling over and getting knifed. Grilka gives him the rundown on how they got there, and Quark demands to see all their ledgers. Doing it her way has run out of steam, and now it's time to play it his way. Quark analyzes the finances and discovers that Dagor has been undermining the House of Kozak for years, weakening their position financially so he could take them over. Methods that are unbecoming of a Klingon, as far as Grilka is concerned, and the council agrees when they take the evidence to Gowron. However, Dagor is prepared, as he challenges Quark and brings out a witness to Quark's cowardice, Rom. Quark and Rom try and flee in the night to avoid the challenge. When Grilka shames Quark, however, for trying to go, he changes his mind, showing up at the 11th hour to face the challenge. Before he can be killed, however, he throws down his blade and states the obvious. He cannot possibly fight, so he refuses to. He will not give Dagor the excuse to preserve his honor. When Dagor attempts to kill him anyway without honor, Gowron stops him. He is ritualistically shamed, and Quark is saved. Gowron grants the house back to Grilka, who divorces Quark at his request, then gives him a kiss. Rom is gobsmacked. I feel obligated to point out that the way in which one is divorced by a Klingon is being yelled at and slapped. So,
and spit
Quark
on.
Is all you kinds of turned
forget
on.
Spit on.
And spit on. So yes. Quark is all kinds of turned on right now.
This episode woke up some things in me.
Back on DS9, business is slowing again, but Rom tells Quark that he's proud of him and cheers him up by asking Quark to repeat the story of how he outsmarted Dagor. In the B-plot, Quark isn't the only one feeling the effects of the Dominion. Miles comes home and goes right for the beer and is full of complaints, to which Keiko is somewhat unimpressed considering she closed her school since everyone has left the station out of fear of the Dominion. Miles tries to comfort her, but she resists. She pretends to not be that bothered. Miles puts on his fancy shirt and throws together a big fancy dinner for Keiko the next evening to try and cheer her up in another way. His efforts pay off, at least for the night, but in the morning as he's leaving, he watches her sadly settle in to do nothing. Miles goes to Sisko with an idea for how to cheer her up. He wants to convert one of the cargo bays that isn't in use into an arboretum. Sisko, because he's a pretty dope dude, is entirely on board. At lunch, he is so desperate for his plan to work that he asks for Bashir's help, and I do want to pause to emphasize how desperate Miles must be for him to go to Bashir for approval.
They're starting to become friends. They're starting to become friends now.
Yes, I know. Yes, I know. But do you think for an instant that O'Brien respects Bashir when it comes to romantic endeavors?
I mean, there's always like, you know, if they say something ridiculous, I can always just go the entirely other way.
That's true.
Yeah.
Bashir, as it turns out, does not think it's a great idea. It's not that he thinks it's a bad idea, but he fairly accurately points out that this is sort of treating the symptom and not the disease. He gives him a bit more advice, and Bashir reckons that the best thing he can do is help Keiko be who she is and not give her a hobby. He points out that until Keiko can be a botanist again, she won't be entirely satisfied on DS9. At Quark's later, Miles proposes an idea to her. There's an expedition on Bajor that needs a chief botanist, and he's already confirmed that she would qualify for it, and they'd let Molly go with her. It's only 3 hours away by runabout, and he promises that they can figure it out. It's 6 months of work, but he thinks that it's the right idea. He's taken Bashir's advice and found a way to treat the problem and not the symptoms. It's left unsaid, but we can assume she takes him up on the offer.
What an episode.
What a fucking episode.
Oh, yeah.
Man, the B plot, real briefly, we can dispense with it. Get it, Miles. Like,
yeah.
Way to fucking crush it.
And like this episode is like the one that I always point to when I'm like, no, I really like Miles and Keiko. It's not their fault that they were written in the 90s.
Yeah.
Because, like, here, you know, he's trying so genuinely to, like, cheer her up. And, like, Bashir is exactly right. And, mm-hmm. like, it's just such a nice little plot.
Yeah. No, he's doing his best. And he really wants what's right. And when someone helps him see what's the right way to help her, he does everything he can to, like, say, I know what we said, but what we said was wrong. So let's do something different that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's terrific. Like, he's not, you know, digging in his heels. And I mean, it's great. Plus, you know, he shows he can get it. I love it. I love that look into their relationship.
Yeah.
I mean, we all know that Miles is a catch, but it's nice to see that Keiko.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice to see that, you know, to see Keiko knowing it too. So great little bit.
We also get the Return of the Dad outfit.
Yeah.
Oh, Miles.
And I love the dinner that he puts together for her. It's so nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's a good dude.
Overall, just like 10 out of 10 dad, yeah. Like, husbanding in this.
Yeah, absolutely. Meanwhile, Quark, what do you even say about this A-plot?
I fucking love it. This is like legitimately one of my favorite things. First of all, Grilka is played by Mary Kay Adams, who is one of the Natoths.
Which is fantastic. Yeah. That's such a good piece of like crossover knowledge. I love that. I love that Quark spends this entire episode vacillating directly between afraid and turned on. And they don't even pretend that that's not what's happening.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a very horny episode.
It's yeah. So good.
It's we make a lot of jokes about the fact that Quark wants to get stepped on. But this episode, it isn't joking about it. They're very clear in this episode what Quark wants, and that's for a big, strong woman to throw him around the room like a sack of potatoes and then
delightful.
Leave him wrung out in the morning.
Oh, God, and the moment where it's like, they're like, you have been very helpful, and that is why I will let you take your hand off of my thigh instead of shattering every bone in your body. And Quark is just like, I've never been so turned on in my life.
Apparently, they had to take that several times because the crew could not. They kept cracking the crew on it. And they were just like,
that's too good. I love that.
I also love that the dude that Quark killed is apparently powerful enough that all this did in fact go up in front of Gowron.
Yeah. I was not prepared for Gowron to show up.
It's so good.
When it pans over and it's in the chamber and Gowron's there, I did a spit take.
Yeah, no.
I was so not prepared for Gowron sitting there in his chair, just tired. It was so good. Oh my God. I love.
So there's a really funny thing about Gowron.
Klingons.
Yeah.
In latter day Star Trek, because in early Star Trek, they're so serious and fascist and tyrannical. And they become, I don't want to say slapstick, because that's not
they're
right.
They're particularly fun in DS9. They are more fun. Like, they're pretty fun in Next Generation, but they are particularly fun in DS9.
Yeah, I think part of it is that it's... I will say that it's like, I think that the metaphor for what Klingons are changes. Like, they're no longer the fascist, yellow face-ish red peril that they were in the original series. They're instead sort of like... I mean, they're the former enemies of the Federation, now frenemies, they're space.
They're
Vikings.
The friends to lovers arc of Star Trek.
Yeah, they're now samurai Vikings, and
yeah.
I mean, for better or worse, I think there's some points where you lose certain things, but they're really fun, and apparently there was like. Like the decision to include Gowron was just like one of these things where they were like, wait, we could do like they realized that they had this entire galaxy they could play with. And they're like, well, why don't we bring Gowron on?
just know that the person who said that, the whole room looked at this writer.
Oh, and it was Ronald Moore who suggested it.
Was it?
It was.
Oh, of course it was. Incredible. That's amazing. You know, they all looked at him and they were just like, we can bring Gowron in.
And the decision to have him sitting there slumped, like, listlessly in his chair with his, like, fucking little pad thing.
And
doom scrolling through Twitter while he's
and
setting
I love
up this committee
that
meeting.
The only emotion, the only time in this whole thing that he looks remotely enthused. There's only two moments in this whole episode he looks like he gives a shit. And that's one, the first time he meets Quark and he is just like, what the fuck is going on?
It's so funny.
And then the second time when DeGore dishonors himself, he's like, yes, something to do.
I get to do Klingon shit.
He's like, yes, he is moment, dishonored.
Yes. Yeah.
I can widen my eyes at him.
The rest of the time, he is just like, he literally could not look more exhausted with this horse shit. It's
so
terrific.
Funny. It's, I mean, yeah. And Ira Stephen Baird made a joke. I think that Ronald D. Moore and Gowron have a secret pact. They've never been seen together. I think Ron might actually be Gowron.
Gowron. Oh, that's terrific.
I love the content of that plot too. Like even like beyond just like the vibes, which are the vibes are untouchable.
Oh yeah.
But like I love the fact that like Quark solves this whole thing with fucking forensic accounting.
It's so good. I love it.
Yeah. The scene if you turn to page 7 where the finance report and the Klingons are just like just absolutely fucking
like, I will not turn to page 7. I believe you.
Like I love like the Klingons who are trying to follow along and I'm like, yes, you're I love these guys.
Yeah. And I think I love the idea that this is the moment at which Gowron is sold that DeGore is a piece of shit. Because he's like, this is what you have brought me to. You are forcing me to understand Ferengi financial horseshit. And the reason why I'm in this moment is because you have engaged in this bullshit.
And the moment where like Gowron is like, DeGore, did you truly do this? Did you behave? And Quark's like a Ferengi. Yes, he did.
I also think it's just very funny to like come up with the idea that like the Klingons are like the Klingon High Council is a bunch of like aristocratic nobles who have to go through this accounting lecture.
Yes.
Yeah. It's so good. All that aside, it is such a good Quark episode.
Oh, it is. Mm-hmm.
It is, in my mind, a distillation of everything I love about Quark.
Oh, yeah.
It is Quark at his scumbaggiest. It is Quark at his most noble. And it is Quark at his horniest. And it's all the things I love about
Yes,
him.
All three
all at
once.
The same time.
Yeah, all at the same time. It's Quark showing off that he is a horny little capitalist, but also a fundamentally decent, honorable person who is willing to roll the dice that this guy won't kill him because it's the right thing to do.
It is, yeah.
It's such a big low moment.
It is.
He gets down on his knees and is like, do it, bitch.
Yeah. Oh, it's such a good moment.
Descend to my level and kill me and take the house.
Yeah.
Do it. And everyone will know you're fucking scum like me.
It's like, I dare you to claim that murdering a like unarmed Ferengi who is on his knees is honorable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it's not my favorite part of the episode, but it's very close, is Rom at the end trying to cheer him up. And like, he's trying to cheer him up, but also Rom really does think the world of his brother.
We have finally hit what I will call like in character Rom. Like we haven't seen Rom a ton, and a bunch of the times we've seen him, he hasn't quite been like what I would consider to be Rom.
They haven't dialed in,
but they have dialed him in like precisely here.
Yeah, and him asking to hear the story again is such a sweet moment. I think I said in a previous episode, like, you should be so lucky to have a brother like Rom.
Yeah,
but like
yes. And this will become even more like, that statement becomes even more true as the series goes on.
Rom only gets better from here. Like, I would say that this episode is probably what I would consider like the starting point for his arc.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, I think this is like one of the first episodes where they have dialed in here. Yeah. No, this is Rom, and he will, like, this is the starting point for Rom. There was a character played by Max Grodecheek, who existed, who was called Rom, but like the character here, I think, is like,
yeah.
This is the point where they add the kindness in.
Yeah.
Right. They like, you know, because previously when we've seen Rom, he's been like mostly just kind of like bumbling and conniving and like kind of incompetent and jealous of Quark. And like, here's the point where they get the, like, you know, his care and love in.
Yeah. Another moment that I really love is when Miles comes in to see Sisko and he needs to have like a bro moment with Sisko about Keiko. And Dax is like, no, I get it. I've been on both sides of this. I totally, like, she knows exactly what this moment is about. And Kira's like, that's weird. And is just sitting there. And Dax is like, so we should go. And Kira's like, why? Zero empathy it's whatsoever. Just so funny, yeah.
Until Sisko has to be like, get out, Kira.
It's such a small moment. You can tell that Ronald Moore is on this show now, because there's all these little tiny moments in the show that, like, you recognize as like somebody who is writing to build flavor, for lack of a better word, into characters.
Yeah.
More than just to move things forward. And I think there's a distinctiveness to the way that he does that.
I think one of the things that's interesting is that if you look at, say, like TNG and to an extent Voyager, there's sort of a formalism to how Starfleet officers talk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
not that much. Like, DS9 has shaken that free. Yeah, by
here it's the, like, the, I mean, it's like to the point where it's like, There's little things in the DS9 cast, like there will be a scene where like Dax has her feet up on a console.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like it's stuff like that where it's actually where everything feels just a little bit more lived in and flavorful. Mm. And the idea that it's like guy talk is not a unit, like a guys need to talk, like have questions about like, oh, hey, but like I need to talk about my wife and I need help with that, and that how that's maybe not a universal thing, or Kira is just like such a disaster at relationships that she's like, I don't get this.
Yeah, no, Kira's just like, Kira is just such a mess that she's just like, I don't understand why I can't sit, why I can't move, I'm comfortable.
Yeah.
Fucking ridiculous.
Why can't I just sit in your office while you have this private meeting? Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And props to Sisko. Sisko is such a bro in that scene. He's right. Just like, I totally get it. I know the school will shut down. Whatever you need.
Well, it's pragmatic too, because an arboretum would be like a genuine, like, major improvement to the station.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah, I hope he did it anyway, even though.
Yeah, I'm trying to. I cannot remember whether they do build the arboretum or not.
I don't think it ever like becomes like a shooting location, at least.
Yeah, it's never on screen, but I think it gets mentioned later that I think that it does potentially get built. Just we never see it because that's a difficult set to make. Sort of like how on TNG they constantly refer to. I will note that the Enterprise D does in fact have an arboretum.
Yeah.
But we never see it.
Doesn't it also, does the Enterprise D have whales, or is that one of the other ships?
So yes, there is a cetacean ops thing, but it's never like verbally mentioned. It's only ever shown in like text.
Diagrams and shit.
Yeah.
Whereas the Arboretum is the canonical place that people on the Enterprise D go on dates.
Yeah.
Got it. It's where they fuck.
It's
make out.
It's make out point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, they're no. We cannot go down like what part of a starship you go to like actually fuck. But
the holodecks. How is that a?
I mean, but maybe you don't want to have it on the record that like you booked a holosuite with a certain, or like a holodeck with a person. Like, you know, maybe
I'm just gonna go with Jeffrey's tubes on this one.
Yeah.
I feel like Jeffrey's tube is the answer.
Jeffrey's tube has got to be so cramped.
There's barely enough room to crawl in. Where do you get the? Yeah. There's no room.
There's
for,
those
like,
junctiony kind of, things though.
There's a junctiony thing, but I feel like you'd be scared of like falling down.
Yeah, what if all of a sudden Jordy just crawls by in the middle of you're banging away, and all of a sudden Jordy's like, "Yeah, I'm gonna go see what that noise is up in Junction 2C."
Anyway. I think holidays. We should probably move on.
Holodecks are the motels of a starship.
Yeah.
I mean,
everyone knows what's going on.
But the problem is that you pray
that they're thoroughly cleaned in between uses and you go about your business.
My only thing
Nobody thinks twice about it.
Is that Starfleet is a cashless society. There will be a record of you using the holodeck.
Yeah, but who cares? Who's looking?
Also, I have to say, you know, the quarters on the Enterprise D are very luxe.
Yeah,
that's the other thing. Well, but it's okay. Let's move on. We could talk about this for a half hour.
Yeah,
easy, and we still have a whole nother episode to talk about.
God, yes.
Join us for our upcoming podcast. Where to fuck on the Enterprise D?
I mean,
the D stands. Okay. We're pulled the ripcord on how to quirk. All right. Who is the next episode?
That would be me. I've got Equilibrium, a story by Christopher Teague, teleplay by Renee Echevarria, and directed by Cliff Bowl. We open on Sisko hosting a dinner party for the senior staff. While Bashir mourns the fact that he has to eat beets, and Odo learns how to whisk souffle, Jadzia picks up Jake's old keyboard. As she claims that none of Dax's hosts have ever had any musical abilities, she begins to pick out a haunting melody on the instrument, but she doesn't recognize the song. The next day, she's distracted and can't stop humming the tune from the previous night. She also starts to act out of character, accusing Sisko of cheating at chess and generally being very aggressive and paranoid. As she storms off along the promenade, she encounters a strange robed and masked figure who removes his mask to reveal more masks underneath. She turns around and runs into Quark, realizes that the whole sequence with the figure was a hallucination. In the infirmary, Jadzia is back to her usual self. Bashir discovers that her isobormine levels are low, endangering her connection with the Dax symbiont. We also learn some of Dax's history. Its host before Curzon was Tarius, who was injured in a shuttle accident and stuck in a coma for 6 months before his isobormine levels dropped low enough that the doctors transferred the symbiont to Curzon. Dax inputs the mysterious song into the computer's Interstellar Shazam app, and they decide to take the Defiant to the Trill homeworld for Dax's treatment at the Symbiosis Commission. In the Defiant, Jadzia talks with Bashir about her traumatic experience as a Trill initiate at the Symbiosis Commission. Julian opens up about his childhood fear of doctors, and the two of them have a slumber party in Bashir's bunk beds. Once they reach the Trill homeworld, Jadzia begins a series of invasive tests, but the Trill doctor has a suggested treatment regime that seems to be working. However, Jadzia has another hallucination, but this time the robe figure is joined by Trill guards who attempt to kidnap her, but who are actually just Bashir. The Trill doctor insists that this is totally normal, but Jadzia is not convinced. They all head to the caves where the unjoined symbionts live and breed to speak to the attendants there who have a more holistic approach. A guardian named Timor assesses Dax's condition and explains that the hallucinations are actually memories. There's an imbalance between host and symbiont. One of the previous hosts, that is. They head back to the Defiant to rest until Jadzia's appointment the next day. Back on the ship, though, Shazam has finally found a hit. The song was written by a Trill man named Jaran Balar 86 years ago. Jadzia doesn't recognize the name, but seeing his picture prompts another hallucination. The masked figure murdering a man at a desk, then pulling off his mask to reveal the face of Jaran, followed by her seizing and collapsing on the floor. She wakes up in the hospital, currently stable but still worsening. The Trill doctor states that if she doesn't show improvement within 48 hours, they will remove Dax and place it in a new host. The doctor also suggests that Jadzia's travel through the wormhole might be to blame, which seems very sus. Sisko and Bashir continue their investigations into Jaran Balar and manage to reach his brother, who informs that who informs him that Duran was a candidate for joining, and that he was told that Duran murdered the doctor who recommended that he be dropped from the program before being killed in his attempt to escape. The brother doesn't believe that story, though, since the two of them had spoken prior to the incident, and Duran had been joined in that point. Sisko speculates that Duran was actually joined to Dax in the span of time where Tarius was theoretically in a coma. They head back to the hospital and find the Trill doctor preparing Jadzia for surgery to remove Dax. Sisko confronts her with his findings about Duran, and she admits he is right. Jadzia is currently suffering as a memory block in Dax, meant to suppress Duran's memories, is breaking down. The incident was covered up as it was revealed that a far larger proportion of the Trill population is capable of joining than previously estimated. Nearly half instead of 1 in 1,000. And it would cause planetary chaos if this was revealed. For Jadzia to recover, Duran's memories must be reintegrated with Dax. She returns to the cave, enters the symbiont pool, and embraces a vision of Duran. In the epilogue back on the station, Dax is somewhat shaken but insists to Sisko that she'll be alright, that it's important to know your past in order to know yourself. Once he leaves, she sits down at the keyboard and begins to play.
I have so many thoughts about this episode, and they're in so many different weird directions.
Yeah.
First things first, and I'm going to say it once, I'm going to get it out of the way. Kira goddamn Nerys, you stop flirting with that goddamn wet fascist. I will not tolerate this plot line. I fucking will not tolerate it. It's so weird and so gross, and I'm not about it. Second, I love Sisko cooking for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
In an entirely different way that I love my other favorite captain cooking for everyone. That's a very different vibe. Sisko is more like, Sisko's the dad that cooks for everyone. Mm-hmm. Like
he's the grill dad, you know, like he's out the there making dad. Sure that everyone's fed and like,
yeah. Yeah. Whereas Pike is, we don't have to talk about that. There's plenty of episodes that you can listen to where you can hear me talk about how I feel about that. Anyway, just saying, I think it's very charming that he's cooking for everyone. And holy shit, Jake got tall. Yeah. I didn't really realize it in the last couple episodes. No. But then you see him in this episode and he's like, he went from being like a kid to as tall as everybody in the room.
Yeah,
he grew what, like something like a foot between seasons or something like that. Like, it's nuts. I love it though.
And yeah, but I love that whole scene. And then finally, my third like fork of thought is, holy shit, the commission is sketchy as hell. Everything about it, from like the whole thing is sketchy. From the minute they land, everything about them screams sketchy as fuck.
So, yeah.
And it's not the first time we've seen that.
Yeah,
but like,
this is the first time we've seen them. They don't
in person, but we've interacted with like their agents before.
Yeah.
And we've gotten the vibe that the commission is not
trustworthy. We've interacted with another person who's traumatized by them is what we've done. We've interacted with two other people who've been traumatized by them, is what we've done.
I mean, frankly, we've only interacted with one Trill that's not wildly fucked up by the commission, and that's Dax.
The problem, I think, like, part of the problem with the Trill, air quotes problem, is that the people who you're, like, the joined Trill are the ones who are like, yeah, we went through this ridiculously, air quotes, gifted school program where, you know, like 99% of people wash out.
Yeah.
So congratulations. You've just found a way to make all of your society fucked up.
Yeah. And it ends up with this like extremely fucked up, like, you know, it's funny that the doctor is like talking about how like, you know, the relationship with the symbionts would end up like transactional and there'd be like societal chaos. And it's like the relationship with the symbionts is already transactional, bitch. Like, you know, you're already like doling them out like currency for being like, you know, good at school.
Yeah, it's just a different kind of transaction.
Yeah.
I mean, I do get what she's saying in that.
Oh, yeah.
Her fear is that they're going to be rather than being. But it's a power imbalance. She's fearing that the humanoid hosts mm-hmm. will become basically will be like killing each other and kidnapping. The symbionts.
She's afraid of exactly what we saw at the start of season two.
Yeah. Which it's like this already happens. You just haven't regulated.
Right.
Yeah.
which I think is the, I mean, well, I think when we get to season four, when this book takes place, we are going to have an episode where we talk about the DS9 novel Revenant, where I'm just going to have us read a book. I'm sorry. I'm going to make everybody read a book for this show.
All right.
Because it's like, unfortunately, this is not something that's really brought up in the TV series again. Like, I don't think there's really, there are explorations of how the Trill Society fucks people up, but I don't think there's anything as in depth, perhaps, as you would want.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember from that book of like novelettes about each of the Dax hosts. I'm trying to remember the vibe on that. I just have to read it again.
I think the subject is really interesting because they Discovery had a really interesting couple episodes about Trill, and I've been fascinated by what we've seen of the Trill in this. So I'm super down to read a book that gets more into like, this fucked up situation. I'm so tempted to read like the Memory Alpha article about Trill. Like, how the fuck did they end up in this weird situation?
Yeah, we don't ever really like see like how it started, though.
I'm sure somebody's written something. Yeah,
like
about it,
like
sure
one of the what like the way it's in beta canon is that like there are two sapient species that like started like adjoin them, and like Trill maybe have some sort of marsupial in their background, and that it sort of became this thing of like, oh, like that they sort of accidentally found it. Like they accidentally created this symbiotic relationship. There's also, okay, so this is a weird thing, but basically there's basically canon and legends canon they rebooted the, like the Star Trek book universe sorta a couple years ago, because they basically, they needed to like make it so that Picard was still canon, but all the things that happen into Picard's timeline in the books don't make sense if Picard is canon. The Star Trek books are a weird tangent, and someday, like, well, we could, I'd want to talk with somebody who like was a bit more involved with them, but they sort of have the Star Wars EU problem of expanding larger and larger crises instead of just doing like fun Star Trek adventures.
Everything's got to be at the same scale as the movies.
Yeah,
it doesn't work, especially because there's basically like there's some weird shit. Like Star Trek is like Star Trek writers are so horny to give you different origins for the Borg.
Okay, that's dumb, and that bothers me.
There are like five different origins that have been given for the Borg.
I read one that made me both mad and like,
I think it's good that it makes you mad, because it's like it means that you don't accept it.
The one that I read was that the origin of the Borg was V'ger.
Oh, V'ger, yeah.
V'ger from Star Trek. What was that? Star Trek 2?
Star Trek 1.
Was that Star Trek 1?
Yeah. Yes.
With the probe?
Yes.
That's the origin of the Borg. And I read that, and I went back and read it again. I was reading a wiki page about it or something, and I was like, that's the dumbest fucking thing I've ever read.
Oh, yeah. All of the Borg origin points are very stupid. A lot of them involve time travel as well, which is even worse. It's the Voyager problem. The more you try to explain the Borg, the less fun it is. I'm looking forward to talking about the Borg. This is going to be our next scheduled recording, but we'll probably come out months before this about the Borg, which I'm looking forward to. But Jude, do you remember the episode of Next Generation with the parasites that infiltrated Star Trek Command or Starfleet Command?
And were never heard from again?
Yeah. So in the books, in like the old canon books, those are a Trill offshoot.
Fascinating.
Okay, I hate that a lot.
It's so stupid.
That is exactly the kind of Star Wars legend shit they do, where like everything has to be connected to everything.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, I hate that so much. That's one of the worst episodes of Star Trek of all time, and the best.
Yes, I enjoy it so much. It's awful.
Yeah, I truly do not like the books are like, it's so, you know.
Can I say one thing about franchise books?
Yeah, go for it.
Before we move on to and close that subject. Mm-hmm. Nothing has made me more excited for the possible future of franchise novels than cozy fantasy books. And I'll tell you why. Cozy fantasy has shown there is a market for stories that do not have high stakes, that aren't trying to do anything. It's just people living in an interesting world, fucking doing their thing. Sometimes they get laid.
It's the like appeal of the coffee shop AU.
Yeah. And you know what? I don't want sometimes a Star Trek novel or a Star Wars novel or a whatever novel, even a Warhammer novel. Give me a Warhammer novel where the Space Marines just sit around and fucking drink coffee or go bowling. I would read the fuck out of that. Same thing with all these.
I think part of it is that instead of trying to give you this is from a writer's standpoint, that like why it doesn't work is that there is a need, especially from like people who are trying to market and publish books, of getting buy-in. And so they have to promise higher and higher stakes. When there used to be like just like pocketbooks that came out for all the series that were just like random adventures that didn't really have
extra episodes. Basically,
they were extra episodes, yeah. But then everything had
like
to be connected.
Like there's there's like an entire book that's entirely devoted to Picard like attempting to learn the Harada like speech, which is also an episode, for the record.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that this is Anyways,
my
point
is just that I think it's
I read the shit out of those books when I was a kid, like they were drastically varying quality, but I enjoyed them.
Yeah, well, because you just want more, like, you just want more fun vibes a lot of the time. You don't need the galaxy to end every 6 weeks. Yeah.
Right.
I think one thing that's interesting about this episode is that the reason that, like, there's nothing that actually goes wrong with Duran as a host. It's just that he's also a murderer.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like, there's nothing wrong with him as a host other than that he's, like, a psychopath. Whoops.
And that's the part they can't hang with, is they can't admit that they let a psychopath be joined.
Like they previously thought that would make him like psychologically just like unsuitable to the point of rejection, but apparently not.
Yeah, and I think it's like something interesting about Trill is that they seem to be a very like, they don't seem to be a war, like they don't seem to be like a very warriorish species. And so like they I think they view it as like, oh, hey, this could have been something that kind of rejected him, but you know.
Yeah.
No.
And Jude, so this episode is, in my opinion, basically why the Trill aren't a Federation species.
Yeah.
Because like the shit that's going on at the Symbiosis Commission, like nominally wouldn't fly in the Federation.
Yeah, it does not hold up to the scrutiny that would be required for them to be a part of the Federation.
Yeah.
I get it.
Like, I could definitely see them being like, yeah, we, you know, we want control over this. We don't want any auditors on this process. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Bye.
Mm-hmm. On the plus side for this episode, boy, I really love Bashir and Dax in this episode.
Oh,
I think
yeah.
This is the first, yeah. One of the first episodes I can remember that made me feel like they were buds and there was no genuine, like, Bashir being a horny dork vibes. Like, their whole, like, slumber party scene was
great.
So good. Like, he's being such a good bro. He recognizes she's freaking out. He offers her, you know, empathy and compassion and comfort. And there's no point in that whole thing where you get the vibe that he's like feeling flirty or like there's no tension in that scene.
And he opens up with her too, genuinely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
in a way that I think Justin and I need to have a headphones moment about.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Jude. Sorry. Yeah.
All right.
Because they did not plan his, like, his ultimate backstory at this point.
Yeah, no, I find it very funny. And it's like, it's one of those ways that like, a retcon like that can be natural.
Yeah, it shows the skill of the retcon because it dovetails, like, perfectly. It's just choice because, like, with the like, retroactive continuity, you're like, oh, wow, that absolutely is because he, you know, with it.
What we were referring to is that Bashir's statement that when he was young, he was very scared of doctors.
Yeah, and Bashir being an augment and, you know, having a challenging childhood, shall we say.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm just like, it pings in my mind now that it's like, okay, we have this, and it wasn't planned, but it does come together nicely of that, of just like, okay, it just sticks out now.
Yeah, that is such a nice scene.
I love that Bashir has like pajamas.
Yes,
that he brings pajamas with him on the which is
on the Defiant. Like, I want to be clear, it's one thing to have pajamas in your own home, but it feels particularly, it feels like a particular move to bring silk pajamas on the Defiant.
On a warship, yeah.
Which is such a, this ramshackle bananas warship. It's like,
Although what would we expect him to be opening the door in the middle of the night wearing?
I mean, listen, the Federation is not, listen, for all we talk about this, the Federation is not a horny enough society to have gray sweatpants still.
And like, clearly they're not going to have him, like, answering it in, like, tidy whiteys and, like, his uniform t-shirt.
Yeah, I mean, like, yeah, like, real, I have to assume.
Because real talk, that's probably what he would be wearing.
Yeah, I mean, realistic, I assume that you, like, I assume that starships are cold. This is just me. But I just sort of assume they're colder than, like.
Or, like, feel cold with the proximity to, like, the void of space.
Yeah, or
I have an important question here. What kind of underwear do you think Bashir wears?
I played the fifth. I cannot answer this question. I cannot.
What? Okay. I'm going to go with one of those, like, heavily engineered pairs of underwear that is meant to, like, lift and separate and, like, individually cradle all of your pieces of anatomy down there for, like, ergonomic precision or whatever. And, like,
that's an interesting answer.
Because the sort of man who would wear the thing that he wore to play racquetball.
No, that's good.
And they're also probably silver lame.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot answer this.
Yes, you have to.
I refuse.
You have to.
I mean, listen, I can. Okay, here's my actual answer. I think that he is a silk boxer briefs guy. Like, money is no thing. That man probably appreciates very, like, nice tailored stuff. Like, he probably has, like, the, my God, you spent that much amount of underwear, but, like, because you can replicate that shit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I truly think that.
I feel like you and I are on the same page with this, actually, that, like, he's got to have, like, the most, like, luxury, whatever his taste is, or, like, different like, styles of, like, you know, very detailed luxury underwear for every situation.
I totally get it, but I actually don't agree. I think he's got date night underwear.
I mean, that's what I was implying by my joke, yes.
But I think his go-tos, I think he's a tidy-whitey guy for like, on work days. And then I think he's a bikini briefs guy when it's on date nights.
Okay, fair. That's...
How do we feel about the So we don't like the Symbiosis Commission because they're terrible.
No.
How do we feel about the caves full of, like, all the people who are, like, autistic with special interest symbiote?
Well, the Guardians are great. I love that. I love them. I love that, like, a species of weirdos has, like, an even more specific subset of weirdos.
Yes. Of, like, all the people who are like, yes, my entire life is, I vibe with the symbiote.
And apparently...
I love it.
And, like, they're like, two things. One, I believe all the Guardians are unjoined.
Yes.
The other is that they have, like, a limited telepathy.
Yeah.
Which is cool. And it's, like, it's one of those things that it's, like, we will never touch on this again, but...
Yeah, but it's one of those things where, like, we never touch on it again, but it's like all of the... I feel like my favorite Trill things are the things that are, like, dropped in once and never touched upon again.
Yeah.
like the reaction to insect bites, or, like, this, or, like, my favorite memory beta thing where, like, you know, the first host for a symbiont is, like, weird as hell because the symbiont brings nothing but memories of being in pools.
Yeah, the penultimate episode of this season... is going to be a real fun one with regards to Trill.
Yeah.
I really like the Guardians. I think he's a little tropey, but like in the fun way. It's such a Star Trek vibe that this species, this advanced space species, has like the unjoined half of their race living in cave pools.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's not all of them, but it's like, it's just these weird, like, specialist dudes, because they, like, the idea of it is, like, you know,
the... That's where the symbiotes go, like, go to breed, or for, like, a little siesta between hosts.
Yeah, like, 99% of the population are normal people.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, like, miles of caves where these unjoined symbiotes hang out, but it's, like, it's not fancy sci-fi tanks, it's, like... Cave set B.
Oh yeah, no, it is generic cave set
with cave pools in it, and it's
with those vertical fluorescent tubes.
Mm-hmm.
God. Also, one of my favorite parts of this episode is just part of this is just like throughout this entire episode, you get the family vibe of the crew as it's like they've really been hammering it, and I love it. But the actual, like, dinner scene is great. Like, we get the first reference that, like, Sisko's from New Orleans and that his father has a restaurant.
Yeah.
Yep.
We get Odo whisking the souffle, which is such a scene.
I love it so much.
What great physical acting from Renee. Like, yeah, 10 out of 10.
I may not like Odo a lot of the times, but... Fucking the actor who played Rene, the actor, is terrific. And that scene where he's like looming over the bowl looking in, and then his like the way he is stirring that souffle bowl,
simultaneously being like filled with joy, right? That he is like, he somehow conveys both being so incredibly awkward about it while simultaneously having the time of his life. It's incredible physical acting, and like,
it's great,
and yeah,
it's terrific.
Renee is like 98% of the reason why I love Odo so much, against my better judgment.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good stuff in that scene. I hope we get more dinner scenes.
Yes, that will become a recurring thing.
Yeah. My other favorite bit from the dinner scene is Bashir, who you would expect to like expound on like the nutritional value of beets, being like, sad face, I hate beets. No.
Yeah, like a little kid. Yeah, that was very good.
Apparently it was originally rutabagas, but they didn't think rutabagas were a funny enough vegetable.
rutabagas would have been a lot funnier.
I do like how Sisko like very seriously says like, beets are a very misunderstood vegetable.
Yeah, because like you're going into that like expecting that Bashir is going to be the one who's like, actually beets are full of iron and vitamins and they're very good for you.
And he's like, no. But instead it's like, oh, I don't like beets. Sisko's just like, you haven't had my beets, motherfucker. Yes.
Yeah, it's very good.
And Bashir is like, doubt.jpg.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, like, Sisko threatening to basically say, I will burn down your society if you do not save my friend.
Yes.
Which, King.
I love Sisko is...
That would violate the Prime Directive, though.
You think, at this point, it's very clear that Sisko doesn't give a fuck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sisko has staked his claim to DS9 and has basically set up his little, like, fort on the edge of civilization and just doesn't give a fuck anymore. He's like, I'm out here. I am the last edge of civilization before the Dominion. I already gave so few fucks. Now I give zero. I will burn everything down for this family I am building out here.
Yeah.
I fucking dare you. I dare you to fuck with me today. My oldest friend is dying right here. You think I won't burn your society down over this? Yeah. It's so good. And we're going to talk about this in the next episode, but like the episode that comes out next week. But like Sisko has established a record where he'll fuck with anybody. He will twist anybody to get the job done.
Yep.
I mean, usually he's bullying Quark, and sometimes he has to bully the entire Trill.
Yeah.
Society. Sometimes that's how it's got to be. Is that all we got for this episode?
I think so.
Yeah. Like, I think overall, like, I've never been thrilled with the whole underlying, like, plot idea of, like, what if we gave Dax a secret past host that was also a murderer? Like, but it's fine. It's fine. It's an interesting episode.
They don't give her the Riverdale treatment of, like, I have serial killer genes now, which, oh boy. Listen, I just need you to, like, listeners, if you have not learned about the whole thing about, like, Dark Betty and Riverdale, please just give yourself a treat and, like, look on the internet and you will ask, what the fuck were they doing in the show? But, like, they don't, like, give Jadzia, like, I have the secret dark side that I can tap into, which is like that's the thing you could have done, and they don't.
Except for that one time that they do.
Yeah, no, but then it's cool that they do it one time, and you can do it one time.
Yeah, but it's just like it's not my favorite like character trait that they have established for Dax.
Yeah, basically. That's fair.
But it's a fun episode, and like I'm a sucker for all things Trill.
I think we are done with these. Join us next time. We are going to be covering episodes 5 and 6 of season 3, Second Skin, and The Abandoned. Until next time, just keep circling. Keep circling. Just keep circling.
Just keep circling.
Yeah.
Just keep circling.
The Babylon Project is an independent production. All views expressed on the show are our own. Clips from the original show remain property of the original owner. Music information can be found in the show notes. The rest of the show is licensed under a Creative Commons 4.0 share alike no derivatives license.
Since I've got my local going, Aaron, there's good content on the Zoom backup.
Yep.
Go there to hear Jude talk about Tom Hicks pissing on things.
There is a certain masculine appeal of just like peeing on things.
I have peed from one country into another. I have peed from India into China.
Or Pakistan into China. I understand like the thing of like. Probably like mine was like peeing off the side of a mountain, which was just like
equal. I mean, it's still awesome.
It's fun. It's
Yep.
It's very juvenile, but it is fun. I will admit that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I have to say, this is so utterly foreign to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably the most dude-coded thing that I'm like, yeah.